I tell the same story every year. I started, I ended, I stay with the very end to tell a lot. But I'll share with you if I can a personal story that took place 7-8 years ago. Every year I think I try to add another year. I don't remember how long ago it was, but let's say 8 years ago is probably accurate. It was my in-laws have a place in Yerushalayim. And my in-laws, all their children live in Eretz Yisrael. My wife is the only daughter. One is a lonely number. I'm the only son-in-law. That's the meaning of the title. I'm just kidding. We'll get back to that title hopefully soon. Baruch Hashem, there's a lot of grandkids. And they get rowdy as grandkids, especially Israeli grandkids, get sometimes. And sure enough, one meal, my in-laws like to have things in a certain way, and there was chaos starting at the far end of the other table. I'm looking, and of course, I have six children, and four are the same age as each other, basically. And it was that age bracket that was starting up, and I'm like, the odds are my children are among them, and sure enough, they were. And I don't know what to do. I don't want to, like, draw attention to them, and to my wife and I, that we were bad parents, and our kids were at the other table messing around. So I did what everyone was doing, and I ignored it. Until my in-laws noticed it. And eventually, you know, they look at my kids, and my kids are throwing cups at each other, and the other kids are coming back at them. My father-in-law banged his hand on the table. He says, enough! So I'm like, thank God someone here will take care of business. Take away those cups from those children. I want you to instead bring them glass cups. So I was like, gosh, I missed that in parenting 101. Like, you know, everyone gives the kids the sharpest knives you possibly can and glass cups. It'll be a lot of fun to watch what happens afterwards. And sure enough, the help comes in. They take all the plastic cups away. They plant a glass in front of every single child. And my rowdy 6-year-old boy turns into like an English gentleman. Starts to dab at his mouth, you know, with a napkin. And he starts to tuck himself in a little more. And I'm watching my kids. I'm like, what in the world just happened? I could not figure out why giving them glass cups would affect their attitude so much the rest of the meal. And I figured out weeks later, at least what I think is the reason why. I'll share with you the very end of this small little discussion we'll have together. I was speaking to Avery Lubin recently, actually. He asked me, is it hard to speak? Is it hard to, you know, to speak in public? So it's not usually so hard, but it's a little harder when someone gives you a title you're supposed to speak about. One is a lonely number. It certainly is. And that was the title I was given, without even offering any sort of reason for that topic. So, it's going to be a lot of things I can talk about right now. Most people speak two times in the course of the year. The yeshiva, I only spoke one time. I think last time Rabbi Sachs may have spoken at some point. Maybe it's for people who attend minyan per room. One, if I want the number. I know you're laughing, but it's, for us, we cry over that. It's pretty sad. Could be, it's Shana Aleph. 1 year. It's hard to imagine. You're spending 1 year only focusing on these topics. It could be anything. I'm going to try to tell you three stories. I like to, when I go to recruit, I like to discuss some stories that I experienced. Three things that happened in my recruitship, this one and the one I took beforehand, that I think have a similar theme. But I want to make the theme for this next few minutes that we're going to spend together. We had one of the new questions I started asking in my interviews. Every once in a while, I get very bored of yourself. I get bored of myself a lot, especially in interviews. I ask the same questions over and over again. You're so bored. So I started asking a different question towards the end of last year and the beginning of this year. I started to ask a question, share with me a religious dilemma you experienced at some point recently. I said, don't tell me what happened. I don't want you to feel the past. I don't want to know. But just tell me something that happened over the course of the last few years of your high school career that was a religious dilemma. I want to hear where the guys are holding. You know, I almost broke Shabbos, but, you know, I missed my seeking one time. I tried, but I missed, you know, whatever's with the holding, but I want to know where the holding. So a guy says to me, I don't want to say what school it was, but it was in the New York, New Jersey area. And it was toward the beginning of my trip. He says to me something that, like, when I heard it, my heart, like, broke into. It's so hard for me to have to choose between what the Torah says you should do and what's right to do. I was like, first of all, reject it. Let's start with that. And I'm like, first of all, I got to accept something. Only have to explain what he meant by that. Can you imagine? What the Torah on one hand says, but what really What really is the right thing to do? Like, how do you, it's hard to pick the Torah thing when it's wrong. What does that mean? How can a person in the world possibly think that something the Torah says to do is the not right thing? Your heart, like, as a Jew, you basically, you're serving a God who's just not right. He has mistakes. He does things wrong. We know better. He's mistaken. Society, culture is right. God, you know, he could use some tips on manners and political correctness and, you know, gosh, I wish someone could tell him and share with him. Heartbreaking. God wrote the book, literally, on what's right and not right. And yet, you know, a person, a 17-year-old young gentleman can say that when you have to choose between what God says and what's really right. Story number one. On the reverse side of that, we were at the Great Neck for Shabbos, for a beautiful Shabbat we had together. David was there, Olshan, Shmuel, and myself. It was a big success to see the guys, both guys that were last year and guys, prior years. And Matthew Parker, who was a great, I don't know if you met him, he was here recently. He's an unbelievable kid. He's great. A little shout out to him. He's single and looking, if anyone's interested. Not in the room, but I mean on the tape. So Matthew told over a story. It was actually a bit of parsha that he had. He parked over by parsha, so we shared that parsha together. I think it was that parsha. And he shared with us that Thursday night, which I know, I don't want to talk about why I know it, but I know this very well myself, that Thursday night, a lot of times the rabbi will bring the future bar mitzvah boy into a room with the Sefer Torah and have them lane. See, the voice projects, them comfortable looking in the room. I'm not talking about my personal story. But Matthew, on Thursday night, went in there, and he lay beautifully, as most mitzvah boys do, before the bar mitzvah. On the way out, Matthew said, oh, yeah, that's funny, Rabbi. Today, right now, tonight, Thursday, where? Thursday night, Friday, is my bar mitzvah. I just turned 13 today. All right, goes, mazel tov, it's fantastic news. Wait, shtab marvet. So Matt's like, not just Friday night. What's Marv? What does that even mean? Something he explains, of course, that Marv. Every single night is part of the religion we have. And sure enough, Matthew was like, you know, the rabbi's like, you know, you're supposed to. You're supposed to daven Marv every night. So I was like, supposed to? So then I'll do it. And he went and daven Marv right away. He went to Minyan, daven himself. He went and daven Marv. I'm supposed to daven Marv. I daven Marv. He said, the rabbi's voice, oh, you're supposed to daven Marv. So that rang in his ears, and to this day, I don't want to quote him wrong, but I will. I don't know if it's wrong, I hope it's right. He's never missed a Maariv. Minyan sometimes, not Minyan sometimes. You know why? Because you're supposed to. Why would you ever not do what you're supposed to do? It's just silly. I give this mashal all the time to my students. Can you imagine the following scene? Imagine taking the SATs, and you happen to know this answer is C. You happen to know. Because look, the guy's paper next to you is very smart. I'm kidding, that's not why. You know. No, it's C. But the problem is, you already have five C's in a row. I just can't put a C there. This one I know is right, but those ones are also here. I erase one of them? D. Little pattern, I just can't. That would be ridiculous. You know why? Because C is the right answer. Who in their right mind would ever fill in the wrong box? So Matthew Parker says, I'm supposed to daven mincha. So it's daven marv. Push it. Of course I'm going to daven marv. You know, one of the hardest things for me as a sports fan, which I am, is to watch people do the wrong thing when it's so obvious. A guy cheats, gets caught doing steroids. Everyone does steroids back in the day. And when you get caught, you got to fess up. That's the rule. The rule of the game. Mark McGuire, he passively fessed up. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. Passive, future. Rafael Palmeiro, I did not take steroids. So, Mark McGuire's back in business. He's back, he's a coach. Because he, you know, at the end of the day, he made a mistake and he fessed up. It's the right thing to do. You got to fess up when you make a mistake. When you deny it, when you refuse to admit it, you got caught. You got to fess up already. When things are right, you're supposed to do the right thing. I know they're hard sometimes. It requires effort. It's frustrating, but it's right. So you do it. You do what's right. I want to share with you a story that happened to me the first recruit trip this year that was like, just not right. It was so wrong. And the person didn't even realize how wrong it was that it's like, it's a jarring story. I was flying. I knew where I was from. I think it was from Florida to Maryland. I forget what it was. Somewhere to Florida. Definitely going to Florida, I think. Going somewhere for about 3 hours of a journey. And during that flight, you know, it's important. 3 hours is a long time. You have to sit next to someone you want to sit next to. So I was sitting actually in an aisle row, which is, I left the back window, but my travel agent messed it up and gave me an aisle. But for the story, it was very important, so I'm happy he did. Because I saw what happened with my own eyes, and I was part of the story. Having a Jewish couple, got on the plane, they were sitting, one was in the aisle, and one was in the middle right behind them. So you figure, how hard could it possibly be to trade with somebody else who's, you know, a single in the aisle? I'll trade you my aisle for your aisle. The same seats, there's no extra, I didn't pay any extra money for extra comfort, for leg room. You guys know they have that nowadays. No one paid for that. It was regular size seating. I'll trade you my 17A for your 18A. So then it's my wife. And she's, the other person's single. And this woman, 60-year-old woman about, 55-year-old woman says, no, I will not trade with you. And this is, but we're married. We want to see each other. It's like, I'm sorry, that's my seat. I'm not trading with you. So I was like, my gosh, what is wrong with her? So, you know, I'll trade with you, I said. And sure enough, I gave my seat, my aisle, the big, you know, hush of Jew, pride, take my aisle seat. And sure enough, thank you so much. No problem. It's just my, you know, for the cost, the people. And then, you know, I didn't realize that someone else was in the middle and window that was also a couple. They came in my same row. They're like, you know, these are our seats. The woman's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, and here I was feeling like I did the biggest favor. And in the end, it didn't even work out for the man. I was sitting right behind the woman who wouldn't switch seats. And the couple in the end couldn't sit together. They couldn't. I'm like, what is wrong with that woman? That's just wrong. There's nothing right about that. And as I was looking at her, like, you know, under my breath, wondering, you know, what is this person's problem? The middle of the flight, this little child starts running up and down the aisles. You know, I mean, you probably were one of those children at your stage, but running up and down, screaming, grabbing everyone's, like, you know, like pulling on his legs, and you're like, get off me, you know, you try to keep them and shoo them away. And the mother's like, I'm so sorry. She was also Jewish, by the way, Israeli. And it was like, you wonder what's going on. And all of a sudden, this woman in front of me, she's like, she gets down, she starts playing with the girl. The same woman who would not switch her seat for everyone else, and yet she's like, oh, you know, cooing to the girl, you're so cute, little Mamala. I'm like, Mamala? What's with you? This person just wanted to sit with her spouse, wouldn't switch. It doesn't make any sense. It's wrong. How could you possibly sit there and coo with a child who's acting out in the middle of an airplane, which is nice, and you wouldn't trade 17A for 18A? It was actually C because it was an aisle. You wouldn't trade. It's ridiculous. It makes no sense. And when you see someone doing something that's so off, you're like jarred by it. It bothers you. When you go through life, you don't know what's expected of you. You can be just as off as they are. You think you're the biggest sidekick, you're cooling around with a little kid. People are wondering, they're looking at you, wondering, what in the world are you doing? You wouldn't trade seats. You wouldn't do what's expected of any normal human being. You couldn't get this person, you know, an aisle seat next to the spouse. You have one life. One little number. You have one life. Can you imagine if you just guessed badly? You did all the things that you thought were right, but you were wrong. You thought life was about doing X, and you did X, and it was really about doing Y. And you're like, oops. Now what? You're done. It's finished. You have a single chance. I'll tell you a story. I read a story with my kids a long time ago. Pesach Kron writes books, beautiful books, meaningful stories. It was a town. This town was a very small town. They had no Sefer Torah, and finally, after years of trying to raise money, there was enough money to get a Sefer Torah. And the town was so excited they were going to have a Sefer Torah. It was going to be the biggest Hakadosh Sefer Torah. Everyone was looking forward to it. And they had a whole challenge to the women in the community. Who here can make the nicest covering for the Sefer, the nicest mantle for the Sefer Torah? The nicest covering. And the women of the town who were capable or artistic that way, they all went and they spent time making the mantle, the cover of the Sefer Torah. All of them did. And eventually they showed them off. There were 15 of them spread across the table. And the chachamim of the city would decide which was the best one. And sure enough, this 55-year-old woman, hers was picked. It was this beautiful, purple, finely woven cover. Unbelievable cover. And she was the most exciting person. Her actual cup would make the front, who was chosen among all others to be the one that was danced to the aura for the first time ever in that community. And sure enough, she invites all her family and friends to come and watch her conservatory be the cover, be dancing with the aura and with the Torah. And they get there to put on the Sefer Torah. As they put it on, it full snug. And they're trying and maneuvering. It was too small. It didn't fit. And this woman's watching her hard-earned cover not make it. She's sitting there like, this can't be. I worked too hard on this. And they tried, they maneuvered, and it just didn't work. So someone says to Nelson, you know what? Bring one or the other. Bring the second place Sefer Torah cover. The woman, like, you know, as tears start coming out, she goes, whoa! I have a great idea. Wait. I have an idea. I can save the whole situation here. Just cut the Sefer Torah down and make it fit my cover. Because after all, the cover, that's what really matters, no? Not a few pages off, a few columns. The top line doesn't really matter. We'll get it down, we'll fit it in. Could you imagine how ridiculous that would sound? But it fits me. It fits me. It works well with me. I like that. It works with me. So what? You want to cut out rules because it works better for you? I'm not a morning person. It's not my thing. Stay up at night and learn. Minyan? It doesn't speak to me so much. Who cares? Who cares what speaks to you? It doesn't matter. You figure a way to fit, not to say the Torah, God, into your life. Fit your life into God's life. You don't cut down the Torah because it fits you better. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to keep the Torah, every last law of the Torah. What are we doing this year? What's the point? I went recruiting. I asked everyone the same question. What are your goals for the year? Whoever I interviewed, I asked you all the same question. What are your goals for the year? You all told me your goals. Some of them were really good. Some of them were less good, but fine. Who's keeping them? Who's keeping the goals? Are you doing it? Spending the year the way that you promised me you would? More importantly, you promised yourself and your parents that you would? This is a chance to be such a special time. You will never forget your Israel, ever. Besides the sweatshirts that you have, I forget about you, you might forget about him because wait, you make a sweatshirt, but besides that, it's not about a sweatshirt, it's about your life here. Are you taking advantage of your life, of the year in Israel, that you've been waiting since you were who knows how long to come? Now it's almost past the halfway point. You got, the clock is ticking, Purim's around the corner, Pesach, the last month, it's slipping through. Are you doing what you promised you would do? What you promised me you would do? What you promised yourself you would do? This point of the year, to be showing up for Minyan, I don't even know the number of times that you are in a week. Are you kidding me? That must be a joke. When I hear in the morning the attendance that takes place, there has to be a misprint. That's not a 3 meeting, that's an 8 before the 5, not a 3, right? Must be a joke. That's what you promised for the year? That's what you're doing here? That's what we took you for? You know, there was a debate. I mentioned this way back in the beginning of the year. I mentioned this. The first speech I gave in the lunchroom, it was a big debate. ESPN.com had an article where they were discussing who had a better career. I'll just remind you if you didn't remember. Luke Longley versus Karl Malone. It's a silly conversation to have. Karl Malone was the best power forward maybe ever played the game. Ranking the top 1-2 of most offensive categories. Luke Longley is who? What? How do you spell that? He was the best big Australian player ever. Who cares? Who cares? Okay. But he was part of 3 championship-winning Chicago Bulls teams. Chashuv. Malone never won a championship. So who's better? When you're part of something very special, it's unforgettable. You have the opportunity, you're in Israel. You'd be part of the most special thing in the world. Can you imagine 100 boys doing the same thing? Working hard on growth. When someone falls down, you pick them up. Instead of being bad influence on each other, you know, where one guy is sleeping and the other, my roommate's sleeping, I'll sleep through many and also. Could you imagine the potential this year has and how we're squandering it? I'll tell you one last thing. One last thing about this point. I'm done yet. I went home, not home. I went to America to recruit, I mentioned earlier on. I can't tell you how many boys said to me, I said, what do you want? Torch Rock, why does it appeal to you? They said to me, the guys that go there, unbelievable. Just fantastic. They're great. See, they're getting into it. See, the guys that come back. But I heard other boys say to me, you know why I don't want to go to Torchaga? Because of the guys. I saw someone in the middle of davening on his phone. I saw someone, you know, in the middle of this year playing on his phone. But I don't go to Shiva where they don't even listen to their band. You are the reason to be successful is because of you. You're also the reason why it's not successful, because of you. Every yeshiva has rebbeim. You have to, otherwise you're not a yeshiva. And hopefully they're all good, and I think we're pretty good also. You make the difference. There are boys who left Yisraga and said, I will not go to that place. You know why? Because I saw that kid in the middle of that shmooze doing that thing. Because I showed up for shacharis in the morning, and it, I don't have to go on. I don't want to go. Why don't I go there? Why do I need someone, any of us, for Bayim, going to America, and someone pulls eyes and says, excuse me, is it true that it's trying to X, Y, and Z happen? You promised me. And now what? So we lost a kid because of you. I took a chance on you, and you failed. And you failed you, and you failed me, and everyone else who happened to be around that could have possibly been succeeded. You failed them. But there are so many boys who told me the opposite. That the boys try the best. And you happen to be that they're right, they are the best. The best. By far, I'm biased. By far, the Shrakas are the best. Which is why it's so much more painful. Because when you're the best, you're supposed to be the best, and you fall short of being the best, that's the saddest story. So sad. I'll tell you how sad it is. I'll tell you why it's so important that you take advantage of the opportunities that you're given in life. It's Shiva yourself. Where Zach spoke last 2 weeks ago, maybe it was, the Parsha Mishpatim. And we know that we can give a pierce to the ear of the person who wants to stay on as a slave. If you stole and you can't pay it back, we pierce your ear. When? 6 years later. Why? Because the same ear that heard our Sinai, thou shalt not steal, and stole anyways, pierce that ear. Didn't listen well enough. Schwab asked the Kasha. Lo Sinod is not about stealing. It's about kidnapping. Sorry, but no one kidnapped. You stole. You didn't kidnap. Why in the world are we piercing your ear for Lo Sinod when it really means thou shalt not steal another man? Not money. And Rosh Hashanah is the most unbelievable thing. It says you did kidnap. You kidnapped yourself. You're not supposed to be there. Why are you sitting in someone else's house being told what to do? You should be a free man, serving your family and your Lord like you want to. You kidnapped yourself. You chose to go where you shouldn't have gone. Who here is guilty of kidnapping right now? Who's taken a life that God granted you one time, and one is a very lonely number. And you decided to take that life and spend it in a way where God did not intend? It's more important to you to sit in your room and watch television shows and movies. That's what your life is about? And now I'm too tired for Minion, so I'll see through that. That's what your life is about? What are we doing? You don't even understand how great you can be. I'll tell you a quick story. Another story. My boy told me a story, so I don't even know if it's true. I tried finding a line last night, and I succeeded only partially finding a line. Part of the story I saw, and the part that I want to share with you, I didn't see. My kids wouldn't lie. Their friends told them it happened. So if you're 12, it must be true. We're told. You can Wikipedia later on yourself. Thomas Edison's part is true. Thomas Edison, at the age of either 4 or 6, my local between Wikipedia and the other article I read, was sent home from school with a note to his mother. Little Tommy gave his mom the note, and it said, oh, Thomas, the teacher says you are way too smart to be in school with me, that teacher. I can't give him any more information. You gotta take care of yourself. Wow. And Thomas had this big smile on his face. Knew. And the mom homeschooled Thomas Edison. Until she passed away when he was a little younger. And he said to himself, my mom put so much time into me, I want to put time into myself also. And he sat and he worked, he became a great man. He made 1,093 U.S. patents. And everybody says the same amount of numbers. So that's really true. And later on in life, Thomas Edison was cleaning up something, whatever, something in his mom's house, cleaning up the mom's house. He found the exact note in the drawer. And he took it out to put it in his wall. Remember his mom? And he opened up and didn't say what his mom said. Said, your son Thomas is too dumb. He can't learn a thing. I can't deal with him. He's on his own. Could you imagine that? His mom lied. She lied. She said, I will not take what someone else said to my son. And for truth, it's my son. I want the best. So she lied to him. And she made him unbelievable. And to this day, we thank his mom for everything that he became. Because she never gave up on him. And she made him an unbelievable inventor. Because she believes in him. When I was here for Shabbos, my first in Shabbos with Rabbi Zinkin. Rabbi Zinkin stole the show. He didn't let me speak at all. He spoke for about an hour and a half about his life story. If you remember. I had a story to tell. I'll only tell for 1 minute. I'll tell you what changed my life around. When I came back from my second year in Israel, I went to visit a friend of mine. He lived in Maryland, where I lived. It's down the block from me. And I haven't seen him in a while, but I know he was not doing well religiously. He had switched from YU. I'm not making any comments about any Czech values, but he went to YU to Maryland. And he completely was done. Not religious at all. To this day, I called a close friend. I haven't spoken to him. I speak to him every year on his birthday. And I went over to say hello to my friend and his sister, who's 2 years older than me, my sister's age. Says, Avi, arms open wide. Give me a hug. Shut up, Ed. No. One of my sisters. Debbie! I don't hug girls anymore. She looks at me, she goes, looks at me, looks at her brother, looks at me, she goes, yeah. That'll change in 3 months. Possibly? Is that possible? Could I possibly have finally found a connection to God? Possibly. That in 3 months from now is over? Could you imagine the fear that haunted me for years? When I was in YU, and I even thought for a second in my life to do that thing wrong. Go with that person. Go there. Do that. Her voice was echoing in my ears. I will never. I will prove you wrong, Debbie. I will not do that thing wrong. And blame her. I make mistakes. I'm a human being. I make mistakes. That fear carried me through. Rosh was right. I want to finish on time. It says in the Gemara in Chulin, Kuf Lama Tesma Beis told that there are many people in the Megillah who have references in the Torah. And one of them is Mordechai. There's references over here. Where do we know Mordechai in the Torah? What's the source for? So it says Mordechai. There was some, myrrh tree. Meridachia in Aramaic. Says the Gemara, Meridachia, Mordechai. Sounds familiar? Sounds right? Good. That's the source for it. And the Tziv has an unbelievable shot to explain how there's a source for it. He doesn't say anything about Mordechai, but he says what this tree is. This tree is a tree that no matter how hard you try to replicate its surroundings and its environment, it will never grow if you take it out of its right spot. It won't grow. Mordechai said to Esther the following thing. The climax of the Megillah. You think, Elti Roshan mentioned the other thing, you think that you're going to be able to sneak away and be saved among all the other Jews. You're going to save, you're going to save just you. We're going to be killed by Haman and his people. And you're going to make it. Think so? I have a surprise for you. We're going to make it. I don't know who, me, you, I don't know who it's going to be, but I can promise you one thing. This may be why you are here in the world for. This is it. Mi Yodea. This could be it. Could you imagine blowing this chance? Mordechai was all about, you got to know who you are. What is the point of your life? Just to be a queen? To physically live until you die natural causes? That's not the point. When are you going to be supposed to be in the end? When are you going to thrive and become great? One's a lonely number. You might think that you're not one, you're many. Look around. Let's choose your only one. You're one. You will be one spouse, husband for your wife. You are the Rosh Hashiva of your family. You are the Mashgiach of yourself. You are one. One is only lonely when you don't know how to be one. If you know what one is, if you know what you are, one is even comfortable one. You will all be one day. Could you imagine being a terrible Rosh Hashiva for your family? Could you imagine basing your education, not letting your kids study for the year of Israel? Could you imagine the Rosh Hashiva of your family? Nah, it's not for you. Could you imagine kids that say, I want to study second year in Israel? Could you imagine this? You'll say back to them, one's enough. Could you imagine that? Rosh Hashiva? One? A family? No more. You've had enough. You've learned enough time right now. Rosh Hashiva? Two? You're one. You're the one. What you do right now will decide how your one will be. Will you be a good Rosh Hashiva for your family? A good Mashgiach for yourself? I never thought I'd quote Eminem in a schmooze in my life. But, you know, yeah, Chachmatz is lyrics. When I was in Florida, there was a basketball game I went to, the Miami Heat, and they used to play this every time that they're between parts. I don't know the rest of the words, I'm sure they're bad. You only get one shot. Not miss your chance. You get one shot. You get one shot in life. This year is one shot. This life is one shot. That's all you get. Could you imagine blowing your one shot? It almost happened a few weeks ago. Not to me, but I worked with you. It was a football player for the Patriots, named Malcolm Butler, who no one ever heard of beforehand. Ever. Unless you were a really weird sports fanatic or a Patriots fan. Maybe they also heard of him. Which might be the both, the same thing, actually. In a good way. Can you imagine there's a few seconds left in the Super Bowl, and you happen to know what's about to come? You know. You're pretty sure you know what the play is. And you know exactly what you're supposed to do. You know you don't have to beat the guy to the spot. You know you have to do that. And you know the ball's coming your direction because you know who the receiver is. It's your only chance. This is it. Like, you're either the most famous player. You hit it. Hit it big. Or you're the guy. Not only did you miss that tip last time where somehow Richard had the guy's leg and he caught it, but you also blew the last play that your coach warned you about in practice. This is what you're waiting for your entire career, is this moment. Even though he's just recently started playing. Either he's a hero or he's a goat. He jumped the route. He intercepted the ball. He's a hero. Who here jumped the route? Who here is jumping at the chance to do what you're supposed to do? One is a lonely number. The last time I mentioned that title. It happens to be, though, and don't mistake my speech for this last part. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be one. The opportunity that you have right now in life to work on yourself religiously doesn't have to be one. It could be two. It could be two. I don't care where you are in life. It could be two also. The fact that you talk so haphazardly about coming a second year, maybe, we'll see. Yeah, think about it. What? Would you say that about a wife you want to marry? Maybe, I might marry. I'm thinking about that. Possibly. Where you want to live? I may live there. It's a nice place. I could think about doing that. Yeah, good career. I suppose I'll go into that also. That's okay. You're talking about your life. This is a life-altering decision you're about to make right now. Many of you. You can ask any person here who stayed a second year. Ask any one of them. Different. Just different. You think a single year, what you've done, is enough to be the Rosh Hashiva for your family? Mashgiach for yourself? You jump the route? You're filling your goals? Or you're cutting the Torah down so it fits your cover? My kids did not act out because they realized when they're given glass cups of that means that they're adults. That their grandfather felt they could handle a glass cup. Who in the world ever thought a six-year-old kid could have a glass cup? No one does, because they shouldn't. my father said they should. So give them a glass cup and see how they react to it. God gave you glass cups. Torah Shraga gave you glass cups. Trusted you. We expect from you. You promised us you watch them well. Some of you have, beautiful. Some of you haven't. Now you all know who you are, and you probably know most of who you are also. And if it was merely one and out, then I can understand why some of you would be like, gosh, it's slipping through my fingers. But Eminem happened to be wrong. He was wrong. He had more than one shot. You have the chance of a lifetime to do this well. And I can promise you, I can promise you, if you do a good job, the world is different. It deserves your attention. It deserves your focus, and it deserves you. You deserve you. More than anyone else, you deserve you to make the best decision with your life. Have a good afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah.